Let's talk compost with our Monday expert. Have you ever wondered, you probably have if you're a homeowner, how to create the ultimate compost? It's not for everybody, but there are plenty of people who don't have a compost yet, I imagine, who just haven't done it because it sounds too hard or they don't know where to start. Well, today's expert is Jennifer Kerr from the Compost Collective. She runs workshops on how to compost well, and she's with me in the Auckland studio. Hello.
Hello, Jesse.
Nice to see you.
Lovely to be here.
Where should we begin? I've got loads of questions about composting. So have our listeners. But if you're listening and you want to throw one at us, 2101 is the text number. Why should we compost?
Why? Because in nature there is no waste. So it's a very natural process for everything that is waste to become food for something else. And that's what we're doing with compost. We're turning our scraps of food that we don't want, our garden waste, and we're basically creating soil. So that's the best thing for it, rather than it going to landfill. And that's why Auckland Council started this program, the Compost Collective program, is to reduce the food waste going to landfill. Mm. It's no good in landfill. It's totally wasted. It's creating methane in landfill. But when we compost it well at home, it's producing hopefully no methane or less methane, and we're getting fertiliser compost for our garden.
And when we talk about composting, what sort of systems are we talking about?
So there are three different systems that we promote, and it's really up to people to choose the system that works for them. So one system is worm farming, where worms eat up the food scraps and turn it into worm tea and worm castings. There's also the Bokashi fermentation system, where we'll take all food scraps, all solid food scraps, and they are fermented. And once it's a two-stage process, once they're fermented, they then have to be buried somewhere, whether it's in a compost bin or in the ground. And the third system is a compost bin, a cold compost, where you have some sort of container or maybe even just a heap in your garden, and you're layering up green and brown materials. And that's the important thing there, to get the right balance of green and brown materials.
Yeah, we'll come to that. And I imagine that's what we'll mostly talk about today. But anything you want to say about either Bokashi or the worm farms, who might they be suitable for?
Worm farms are great to get children involved if they like insects and worms and things like that. And they also... they're a relatively clean kind of compost. It's enclosed. You're getting all the goodness of the liquid coming out and the solid coming out. And they're fantastic for the garden. So they, perhaps a little bit more work. The worms are a little bit fussy about what they eat, but not too bad. So, yeah.
What do they look like? I mean, do you buy a worm farm?
Yes, so through the Compost Collective, once people have done a workshop, they can then access a discount off one of the products. And the products that we have are a square type worm farm, or a Bokashi bucket, which is in buckets, or a big kind of rectangular compost bin. Those are the three systems.
I'm looking at some. We've got some photos online, by the way, and I'm looking at a worm bin now. Where do you buy one from?
Did you get that one? That's the three we've got, three different systems.
Where do you get a worm farm from? Like a hardware store?
Yes. If you're not in Auckland and maybe your local council's not supporting this sort of program, you can just go to the hardware store and buy one. Or maybe go on Trade Me or Free Stuff or something like that and get a free one that someone else doesn't want anymore.
I apologise in advance for the stupid questions. Where do the worms come from?
You usually will need to buy the worms yourself to get started, unless you have a friend who has a successful worm farm who is happy to give you some worms. Then they are a special type of worms. They're tiger worms or compost worms.
Oh, yeah.
So they're smaller than the normal earthworm, a bit skinnier. They can often be quite orangey, stripy orangey, which is why they're called tiger worms.
So we've been at the beach at my dad's beach house, and he's got a compost there, and I noticed heaps of worms in his compost. Is that a good sign?
It is. For a cold compost, you can have a lot of worms in it. If you have a hot compost, which not many people have because you have to do it all at once, a big one, it can be too hot for the worms. But when it's a cold compost, that can be the right environment for them to be in there, and they're helping eat up all that material and turn it into compost.
Okay, so that's the worm farm. And then what about the Bokashi thing? Who's that? Is that for more sort of apartment dwellers?
Perfect for small spaces. If you don't have a backyard garden, so you actually just want something small that might even fit in an apartment or just outside the door somewhere, and you can even give away the product, take it to a community garden, or use something like Share Waste to connect with someone who would like that. And people who want more compost, more organic material for their gardens, they can go on to Share Waste and connect with people who want to give it away.
Sounds quite smelly, garbage fermenting in your little apartment.
Well, nice fermentations can smell a bit like a cider or a vinegar. They don't need to smell bad at all. So a Bokashi system that is working properly actually smells quite sweet, almost like juice. You know, a really good one. You smell it and think, "Oh, I could drink that." And then you think, no, this is Bokashi. It's not for eating or drinking.
I've been doing some good fermenting over the summer, actually. Listeners, remind me to tell you about that. I've been fermenting all sorts of seasonal fruits, but we'll come back to that. So let's talk composting. Oh, actually, do you want to give us some figures about Auckland, and this is the region obviously that you're interested in, about how much gets thrown away and that sort of thing?
I can't tell you how much is thrown away, but I can tell you how much we're diverting from being thrown away. Mm. Last year, 493 tonnes of organic matter were composted instead of going to landfill.
Okay, great. If you just tuned in, by the way, I'm talking to Jennifer Kerr from the Compost Collective, and she's going to teach us how to compost. So let's go to this, I guess, the cold compost, the one that that most people will know. Where do you begin?
You probably want some sort of container to put it in, so such as a compost bin that you can get through the Compost Collective or from a hardware store.
What sort of size are we talking?
240 litres is probably the smallest. There are some bigger ones too. Yeah, decent size. Mm. And then you want to put it ideally somewhere sunny, because heat is going to help the breakdown process. So I always think that the south side of the vegetable garden is the perfect place to put a compost bin. Then when the compost is ready to go in the garden, it's not far to move it onto the garden. And in the meantime, it's not shading the garden, but it's in the sun.
Okay. So you've got a site for it. You take your compost bin. Anything to consider before you sort of plonk it down in the spot you want?
Yes. If it's a really weedy area, for example, with something like kikuyu grass, you might want to put some cardboard down underneath it to try and prevent those weeds growing up into it. Other than that, just bare ground or a bit of grassy, not too weedy area is absolutely fine.
I noticed my dad has chicken wire underneath his.
Yes, that can help prevent rats getting into it.
Yeah, let's talk about rats, because that'd be quite off-putting for a lot of people.
It can be. So if you really want to keep rats out of your compost bin, you need to put wire netting not just underneath, but partway up the sides as well, about a foot up the sides, because otherwise they will just eat through the plastic to get into it.
Holy moly.
You've got to think that to a rat, a compost bin is a bit like a luxury hotel.
Disneyland.
Yeah, it's got a roof on top. It's just got this room service that just arrives.
Yeah, so creepy, eh? Can I, as New Zealand's leading rat trapper, sort of, can I point out, by the way, that if you have a rat trap at home, you're trying to trap rats, if you've got a compost bin that's accessible as well, you're not going to have any luck in your rat trap. Because no self-respecting rat will bother investigating a trap if they've got free food a few metres away. That's my message from me to you. And I've got a rat trapping FAQ on the RNZ website if you're interested in getting trapping yourself. But that's a conversation for another day. Okay.
We do offer a free rat trap for people who buy products or come to our workshops through the Compost Collective. That is an issue. And so we offer a free rat trap to people. Okay. With a tunnel.
Yep. So you're plonking it down, maybe with some chicken wire, bit of cardboard to keep the weeds out. And then what next?
You want some brown material. So brown material tends to be dry, dead, comes from trees. It's high in carbon. And you want some twiggy stuff at the bottom so there's airflow. So compost needs air, it needs moisture, and it needs the right balance of food-type materials in it. So right at the bottom, you want that twiggy stuff to help create airflow. And most compost bins will have air holes in the sides of them to allow air in. So start with that. And that twiggy layer is a brown layer. It's a high carbon layer. You might also want some looser, smaller kind of high carbon materials such as dead leaves, for example. So think of anything that comes from trees. So wood chips, wood mulch, sawdust, all of those sorts of things are absolutely fine as brown material. And then in the household, things like your paper and cardboard scraps, they're also from trees and able to
go in the compost. Oh, that's good. So you could tuck your newspaper in there when you were done with it.
Yeah, just rip it up a bit. You don't need to go to the extent of shredding it, but, you know, tear it into pieces so that it's going to break down quicker and allow airflow and things to move around in there.
Okay, so that's a kind of a bit of a base for the bin.
That's right. Now, you're going to want to water that, particularly this time of year, summer, when it's hot and dry. You're definitely going to want some moisture on that. And then you're going to add a green layer. And a green layer is your kitchen scraps. It's those things that are moist, they're wet, they're often green in colour or very, very colourful, and they break down quickly, they rot quickly. Things like grass clippings and food scraps are green materials. Mm-hmm. So you want to put a layer of those in there. They might not need extra water because they're already quite moist usually, but maybe water them. And then on top of them, compost is like a sandwich. So on top of that, you always want to put a brown layer on top of that again to close that sandwich. So it's always brown at the bottom, brown at the top, green in the middle, and then you keep on going like a huge giant club sandwich. Next time you've got some green materials to put in, put them in and add a brown layer on top.
Right, because I'm imagining heading to the compost bin quite regularly, like probably two or three times a day with the amount of like waste that we create in our massive family. So is that a problem, like just tossing it in whenever, or do you have to put in brown stuff every time you put in green stuff?
The problem if you don't cover up that green stuff is you're more likely to get issues with flies and fruit flies and smells. If you're always covering it up with brown material, that is acting as a bit of a filter, stopping the smells, preventing the flies from
getting
in there.
So maybe you're better to have quite a decent-sized food scraps bin.
In your kitchen, possibly. Yeah. And that's where the bokashi bucket can also be useful, that you can ferment your food scraps in the house, and only when that bucket is full. And with the bokashi system, you're squashing things down, getting rid of the air, so it can take quite a reasonable amount of time to fill up one of those buckets. You can then empty that into the compost as your green layer and give it a good covering of brown on top.
Mm. So you want roughly equal green and brown.
Yeah, you actually probably want a bit more brown than green, which a lot of people have the opposite. They have their lots of grass clippings and food scraps and not so much brown. So if you're serious about your composting, go out there and hunt for brown materials. Collect up everything from your own property and then see what you can scavenge from your neighbours, your friends, other places around.
Mm. Good time to bring in Miranda via email, who says, "Hey, I have heaps of giant larvae in my compost. It is really active and gross. Is this okay, or should I be starting again? I use a big tumbler composter and I put hay in as dry matter too."
So larvae, there is a bit of an ick factor there, but it is possible those larvae are soldier fly larvae. And some people actually farm soldier flies to create something a bit like worm castings for the garden. So I wouldn't be too worried about that. But because of the ick factor, you are probably going to want to, as I talked about, always cover with a brown layer. And when you're in a more enclosed space like a worm farm, I even suggest using paper, a piece of paper right over the top that kind of seals it and stops flies getting in and out. And that will help prevent them completing their life cycle so that they die, the larvae are gone, the flies can't fly away, the flies can't get in, and it stops that. One of the reasons people might get larvae in their compost is that they've been a bit slow taking it from their kitchen to their garden. And in that time, it's been contaminated by flies have got in there, laid their eggs. So some people go to the extent of putting their compost scraps into their fridge to keep them cold, keep them away from flies. That's not necessary, but if you've got an issue with fruit flies, that is one possible solution.
I suppose like a click-clack plastic container or something.
Something sealed, yes. Yeah. You definitely want a lid, a sealable lid on your compost in your kitchen.
I'm speaking, by the way, with Jennifer Kerr. She's from the Compost Collective, and she's giving us tips. If you'd like to ask her a question, you can text 2101. Chris says he has lots of brown material and not enough green.
Oh, wow. Can he get some grass clippings from somewhere?
Yeah.
Or what about his food scraps? He's no food scraps? That's the thing with brown materials is they're fine to just stack up and wait for a while. And I'm sure there are lots of other people who would like them who have got the reverse, too much green and not enough brown.
Jenny says, what about ripping up personal papers that you want to destroy? Can you compost them and should I water them into mush first? Jenny's obviously got some shadowy Cayman Islands account that she doesn't want her neighbours to know about.
I think the compost is the perfect place to put confidential paperwork, your own personal confidential paperwork that you don't want others to see. It's highly unlikely anyone's going to go into your compost bin and have a look at those. But do wet them down. I wouldn't worry about mushing them up, but I would rip them. I would make them moist and cover them up with some other green and brown material so that they're hidden in there. And who's going to go look in your compost bin?
Heaps of questions coming through, like this one. Does your compost have to be vegetarian? Would you put any meat in the compost?
Not normally. So in the compost, usually it is raw fruits and vegetables, not any meat or dairy products. Meat and dairy are more likely to attract rats, more likely to create smells. But having said that, if your compost is going well and you throw in an odd bit of meat and it's working fine, that's okay. Just be aware of the possible issues of smells.
What about like an old risotto that I didn't cook very well, that didn't manage to feed to the children, that sort of thing, like cooked food? Is that okay?
Yeah, again, cooked food isn't ideal for it. So again, if you're new to composting, get your compost bin working well with just raw fruits and vegetables.
Uh-huh.
And then once it's working well, experiment, try some of that other stuff. But that's where the bokashi bucket is perfect for all those cooked foods. And once it's been through the bokashi bucket, then you can empty that into your compost.
Simon says, can you ask about methane generation? I don't know what they want me to ask you, but do you have anything to say about methane generation?
I understand compost can create a small amount of methane, but I also understand that is less than the methane that would be produced over time if it just went straight to landfill and broke down slowly over time, but releasing methane gas for a very, very long period. Whereas in the compost, it is getting eaten up, it's turning into compost. Yes, there might be a little bit of methane coming off, but my understanding is less than when it goes to landfill.
What should I do about slugs? Slugs are pretty gross, eh? Especially the giant yellow-bellied ones, asks one listener.
I feed them to my chickens. But if you haven't got chickens, I just accept them as part of the ecosystem. They're going to be in there. If you don't want them, you can pull them out and get rid of them. But I think I'd prefer to just cover them up with some other composting materials.
Okay. I have two rat traps beside my compost bin. They catch rats almost every day. So I think of the compost as a magnet bringing rats to their doom, reports one listener. Thanks. Nice to hear from you. What great timing for this topic, says Kimberly. My husband is threatening that we should get rid of the compost unless we can get our fruit fly infestation under control. Any suggestions? We don't have any lawns, so our compost involves a lot of kitchen veggie waste and then a few garden leaves and trimmings, etc., says Kimberly.
Sounds like it needs more of those brown materials to cover up the food, the green materials. And maybe even think about wrapping up your food scraps in paper.
Oh, yeah.
Just a couple of layers, like fish and chips. And that will mean it's harder for those fruit flies and things to get into it. Cover that up with a nice brown layer. Just make it harder.
Mm. And heed Jennifer's suggestion that maybe the fruit flies are coming in with your green waste, right? Maybe maybe they're hitching a ride with your scraps.
Yes, but in a compost bin, it does have air holes, so it is possible for things to get in and out of it, so they could be laying eggs in that compost bin too.
Mm. So if it's got air holes, even if you've got a brown layer, it's going to be pretty hard to stop them, isn't it?
Yeah, but they're not so keen on the brown layer. So if you think that there's always a brown layer on top, it just makes it a lot harder for them to get to the food that they want.
Someone's asked about pohutu kawa trees. Maria says it rains leaves, but they don't break down. Would you put them in the compost or not?
Some people have a separate compost for leaf mulch. And I know our native trees, the leaves do tend to be very slow to break down. So you can do a simple compost that it's like a circle of wire netting that you just then dump all your leaves into and let them break down slowly over time. A bit like wood chips. Wood chips can be quite slow to break down too, and sometimes people just have a heap of wood chips and let them start to break down slowly.
Outside of the compost bin.
That's right. Yeah. And then later, when they've started to break down a bit, start adding them into the compost.
In my experience, says Martin, the most important thing to do is to turn your compost with a fork to aerate it which speeds up the process in his experience, especially in winter. What are your thoughts?
It's a good idea. If you want your compost really fast, to do that. It also deters rats. If you think of a compost bin and earthquakes, people don't like earthquakes. Rats don't like them either. Sticking a fork in and prodding around a bit quite regularly is a bit like an earthquake, and the rats aren't so keen. So it has multiple benefits, turning your compost. The downside is it is work. So you don't have to turn your compost, but it takes longer if you don't turn it.
Kia ora, someone says, what's the brown layer again? What can you use? Yeah, I think that's worth mentioning because we mentioned it right at the start and we haven't for a while.
Those are the materials that are high in carbon. They tend to be dry, brittle, dead, break down slowly. Paper, cardboard, dead leaves, things that have come from trees like wood chips.
I'd like to know about non-food in your composts, asks one person, like paper towels, tissues and tea bags. What's your thoughts?
Again, the paper towels and the serviettes, tissues, are like brown material, mm-hmm. They're paper, they're absolutely fine. Tea bags, just be aware, most if not all tea bags have some plastic in them, so you might end up with some plastic in your compost. But if you're okay with that, you might pull it out at the end when you see that it hasn't broken down. The tea leaves themselves are absolutely fine to go in there.
Someone asks, why not put food scraps straight onto the garden?
Because you're going to attract rats and have smells and all sorts. Now, there is a very traditional form of composting called trenching, where people basically dig a hole, put their food scraps in it, cover it up. And you can do that, but you don't want to leave it on the surface. It's going to not be nice.
I use a rotating compost bin that I made from a 200-litre drum, reports one listener. I put everything in there and I rotate it 3 times a week. With my family of 4, I only need to empty it once a year. That's impressive, isn't it?
It is. And it is amazing how much organic material breaks down and shrinks over time. So it's something like 80% of organic matter is actually water. And when we compost it, that liquid's going away and you're ending up with a lot less than you expect. So I can see that, you know, yes, you could be composting for a year and still haven't got an awful lot. Those composting tumblers, I don't use one myself, but I understand they're pretty good and not too hard work. You just rotate them rather than having to turn them manually. So, yeah, go for it.
Do you need the brown material in those?
Yes, you do. You still need to mix up those layers. You don't have to worry so much about layering as just having the right kind of proportions. At least half should be brown materials. Maximum of a half can be the green materials. And then as you turn it, as you tumble it, they're going to mix together.
Okay, so what happens then? I'm following your advice, Jennifer. I've got my brown layer at the bottom. I'm throwing in my food scraps, the raw fruit and vegetables, covering with brown layer. And I do this, you know, once a week for a few months. What's going to happen?
You're going to end up by a year with some wonderful black gold. It's going to be dark, sweet-smelling, crumbly, but it holds the moisture, it holds the nutrients, ready for the garden.
And how do I know when it's ready to... So hang on, explain this to me, because I've always had difficulty getting my head around this. So how do you access this? Do you pick the bin up and put it somewhere else, or do you dig in, or what?
That's one of the ways of doing it. Your bin can just be lifted up, put to one side. Then you'll notice what the contents, the bottom will be the black, will be the compost that's finished. On top, there'll be layers that aren't finished yet. So fork them into back into your bin again, and then you can access what's at the bottom. One of the bins we sell through the Compost Collective actually has little doors at the bottom that you can pull off that door, and you can access, you can dig out some of that finished compost from the bottom. Can't take it too much before what's on top drops down, but you can get a little bit out. So if you don't want to physically move your compost, you can use that system.
Not everyone will have a garden to use it in, I suppose.
That's right. And that's where Share Waste is a great place to give it away, or just friends and families who have gardens, give it to them. Tell them you've got some compost, and if they're a keen gardener, they might just come over and get it.
Hi, we have a batch which we rent out, and we want to provide our guests an option to compost their food waste rather than adding it to the general rubbish. It's problematic, though, because we can't look after a compost heap and it has to be easy and clean for guests to use. And then they're asking about a particular system called Green Cone. But do you have any general advice for them, or are you familiar with that system?
I know a little bit about that system. I think it's one that gets buried into the ground, and it's similar to one that is actually used to deal with pet poo as well. So it's buried in the ground with holes in it, mm-hmm. and you put things into it. That, I think it's meant to attract worms, so that worms get into there to eat up the food scrap. That could possibly be a good option. I think the issue is, with guests coming along, that you're not going to know what the materials are. They're pretty much going to have food scraps and nothing else, and you're not going to get that balance of green and brown. So if you provided a big bucket or a barrel of some brown materials for them, like wood chips, sawdust, mulch, all those sorts of things, and said to them, you know, when you put your food scraps in, cover it up with a layer of this, that might work, something like that.
Someone asks whether an organic compost will stay organic if you put newspaper in it. Or to put it another way, someone's asked, is ink an issue on printed paper and compost?
Most of our inks for our newspapers, our community newspapers and our other newspapers, are actually vegetable-based inks now. Mm. So I personally farm organically and don't worry too much about using newspapers.
Are Slaters okay in the compost bin, asks Robin.
I would take that as a sign it's a bit dry. Water it. In Auckland summers, like at the moment, you might need to get out there once a week or so and water your compost.
Can you put seaweed in a compost, asks Mike.
Definitely. So seaweed is what I would call an activator. Things like animal manure from herbivores, seaweed, comfrey leaves, things like that. They are extra special things that you can put in the compost that help it maybe work a little bit faster, a little bit better. You're going to get a higher quality product.
Treat it as green?
Yes, seaweed I would treat as green. Although it is, well, if it's dead and brown, it's a bit mixed, really.
Mm. Should I add lime, asks Jennifer.
Lime, I think, is optional. It's not necessary. If you think your compost is acidic, then lime can balance that out. But if you're doing that layering of greens and browns, it should be fairly well balanced because the brown materials are doing something similar, I think, to what the lime is doing. So it's optional. If you want to, add it, but I don't think you have to.
Why not just, if you leave out the brown layer, don't you just have a worm farm? It still works eventually, doesn't it?
Worm farms also need brown material. So worms can't only eat food scraps. You also want to be giving them some brown materials too. The thing with a worm farm is it's enclosed. Although there are air holes because worms need to breathe, it's an enclosed system and it's quite different. The worms are eating up the food. In a compost bin, there may or may not be worms in it. Hopefully the worms will be attracted to it and they will come. But if it's not the right environment for them, they will go away or they won't go to your compost bin. So it's a different system.
Lots more questions coming in. This is our Monday expert who's an expert on compost. And my question for you is there anything we haven't covered that you really want to, or shall I just keep firing questions at you? Take your time before answering.
I'm happy to keep answering questions.
Okay, great. Will you get Legionnaire's disease from compost, asks Kerry.
Legionnaire's disease, my understanding is it is from breathing in dust from things like compost. And the thing with making your own compost at home and keeping it nice and moist, you're very unlikely to have any dust whatsoever to breathe in and hurt yourself with. Whereas if you buy a bag of compost from a shop and you take it home and you open it up, at that point of opening it up is when you might actually be breathing in dust. So I think home compost is safer. Of course, you always should take precautions.
What about coffee grounds, asks someone.
Perfect. Coffee grounds, although they are brown in colour, are actually a green material. And they are fine for the worms, fine for the compost.
What happens if you put in ripped up compostable coffee cups and lids in home compost? Will they break down or do they need to be commercially composted?
They tend to need heat. So I have tried worm farming some of the compostable products and they just sit there. My worm farm doesn't get hot, it doesn't do it. And in a cold compost, they're unlikely to break down either. So you really need to get that heat. Now, people who are keen on composting and want to hot compost, the thing is you need to build about 1 cubic metre all at once or pretty quickly within a few days of building up those layers, brown on the bottom, green, brown, to at least 1 cubic metre. And then that can heat up. So we make big compost at home. We measure the temperature. It can get up to 60 degrees. That is hot enough, like a commercial compost, that it can break down those materials. But home cold compost, no, sadly, they're not really going to break down.
Ellie's sent us a good one. She made 2 1-cubic-metre compost piles at the start of summer. They're breaking down really well. Lots of straw and hay, glass clippings, bagged compost, about 60 sacks of coffee grounds. She's used a trick that she found online to speed things up, poking a stick deep into the piles and then watering well. The online site showed pouring coffee into the piles and watering well, coffee grounds into the holes and watering too. Anyway, she says her compost was very hot at the start. Sounds like she's very happy with it.
Good.
My biggest bane of my compost is the fruit labels that don't break down, says Jane. You've got to remember to peel them off before composting.
I agree. It's horrible. They should be compostable labels. They used to be paper.
If you put them on a cement slab, says somebody, you don't have to worry about rats.
Yes, but the issue there is you haven't got the natural connection to the soil. What's happening in the compost, if it's on the soil, there are the good bacteria and things coming up out of that soil into the compost. Where it's on concrete, you're actually going to have liquid running out away from that concrete because it's not going to be able to drain anywhere else. Usually it would just drain into the ground below. So, yeah, I can understand might be safer in terms of rats, but not so good in terms of the compost process.
You can put a couple of round posts into the, this is quite complicated, a couple of round posts into the compost mix, reckons Jack.
That might be making those air holes, as another listener talked about, and that can be a good thing. So while you're making the compost, you can have sticks or pipes in there, and then when you've built the compost up, you can pull them out and you've got those air holes. So aeration, compost needs air, needs moisture, it needs heat, so those things are all good things to do.
Helene wants to know if those so-called compostable bags from groceries work in the residential compost.
If they don't have a standard that says they're home compostable, they're unlikely to work in a cold compost, but probably would be fine in a hot compost.
What about garden weeds such as oxalis, asks one listener.
Oh, I would never put that in my compost. I have a weed barrel for my horrible weeds, or oxalis I feed to the hens. They love it, which is great. So, yeah, all of those horrible things, something like an old wheelie bin, put all the weeds in there, fill it up with water, let them rot. Unfortunately, it does get a bit smelly, but it does break them down and you end up getting rid of them.
We'll bring you back to talk weeds at some point. For now, thank you so much, Jennifer Kerr of Compost Collective. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome.